Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's August 10th, 2012. You're listening to the best PokerCast in the world. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We're going to take a break from our usual pattern of doing the show. Not because the listeners asked for us to do it this way.
No, of course not. We wouldn't listen to our listeners.
Which is why we did the survey. We do a survey not to listen to you, but just to know what you're thinking. Of course, every year we do a survey of our fans and readers on a host of topics, from the important to the hilarious. And today we're going to dedicate our entire show to the results from this year's Anties.
Woohoo! Clap.
But don't worry, all of our favorite segments will come back next week. So, Scott.
Yes.
What was your overall impression of the Anties this year when you finally got to scan through all the results and responses?
You know what? I think there's at least a couple on here that were fairly surprising to me. I will stop short of saying shocking because I'm not a tabloid reporter. But yeah, there were a couple that I'm like, wow, I wasn't expecting that. Other than that, I mean, it's... I don't want to try to make the show too boring, but most of the rest kind of came in about where I thought they would. But I think we had some fun. I think we had some fun categories on there, and looking forward to chatting about it today. And hopefully we can get a conversation going on the forum at anteupmagazine.com/forum after the show on what people think.
One of the things that I will be curious to find out is when poker room managers say, let's say there's a question on here that says, what's the most important thing to you for X? And there's an answer that's 33%, and there's an answer that's 32%. Now, are they going to look at that and be like, oh, it's a wash, you know, you can't really say anything about that because everyone's voting, you know, equally for both things? Or are they going to take it to heart and say, both of these things are more important, do I need to focus on both these things? And, you know, I mean, there are instances on this where one vote made a difference,
right?
You know what I mean? And or one percentage point beat out another one, and if it's during like a good or a bad thing, then it's like, what do you take from that? You know, if one is, I think it's good, but it's equal with people who said they thought it was bad, what do you take from that, really?
Well, yeah, we always get this, we'll probably get into a little bit of this later on, but we get into this, you know, some of the open-ended questions, what do you hate about your poker room? It's too cold, and then followed by somebody that says it's too hot.
Yeah.
Or it's too smoky, or it's not, we need to be able to smoke.
Yeah, allow
smoking. It's one of those old adage, you can't make everybody happy. But what I think separates the successful people from the unsuccessful people are the people that say you can't make everybody happy, but you could certainly try.
Yeah.
Versus people who say you can't make everybody happy, so
screw them.
Screw it. So that's probably the answer to your question. I mean, yeah. I mean, obviously, you get a little schizophrenic answers on some of these, but as long as you're trying to listen to your customers and your players, then I don't think you're doing anything. You can't go wrong, I guess.
It's funny. Some of the answers too, when you're reading the answers, and people have to write things, you know who they are. Sometimes it's pretty funny. You just know who's writing that, and of course, a lot of people took a lot of jabs at us. Which is fun. So, hey, we're not above that, right? We love to take some slaps from the Ante-Up Nation when we deserve.
Absolutely.
It. So,
all the more fun. all right, so we kind of broke it into a couple categories and kind of grouped the questions together. So the first one was just about playing poker in general. And, you know, a lot of these questions are repeats from previous years. I probably should have gone back and looked at the actual results. But, you know, some of these, we changed some of the answers, too, to kind of reflect the new world.
Yeah.
has changed so much in a year. you can't really do an apples to apples on a lot of them. But this is always my favorite question because I am easily annoyed in life in general at the people that I share this earth with, and particularly when I'm at the table. And so I always like to know, what is the most annoying trait in your opponents? And this year was a brand new answer that totally ran away with it. Quote unquote, knows it all. 46% of people hate the know it alls.
So they don't want the table captain anymore. That's what they're pretty much.
Yeah. And Smelly was second, which is always the one I can let listen to somebody run on and on and on, but if they're making me gag, that's a totally different story. But that was second, 45%. Probably the most shocking thing I thought here was I added a category for texting and tweeting this year. Because I got the sense that, on the road that there are some people that are just getting annoyed with people being constantly connected to their phones at the table. Only 5.5% of people said that's the most annoying. Now, that doesn't mean they don't think it's annoying.
Right, but the most annoying. Right.
But I was more surprised that not more people said that. But I guess people just, hate the know-it-alls. The people that think they know everything when you're playing a 2-4 limit game.
So, Faso can't be table captain anymore in a home game. And I'll give up junior captain.
Junior captain? Fortunately, nobody's smelly in our home game.
That is true. And really, we don't have a problem with texting and tweeting in the home game either.
No. I mean, people are paying attention. That's the difference. And then that's what a lot of these things come down to. I mean, really, some of these things are all the same. It's just a respect for your fellow player thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that are all these things because they just don't care about you. They know it all. They're smelly. They talk too much. They're Hollywood, and they're tweeting the same thing. These idiots aren't laughing at my jokes.
Our next one was, what do you want most from the jackpot rake? And not surprising that it's always close to this one. It's not because they're particular types of players out there that enjoy each one of these kinds of categories or don't. But the winner overall was Let Me Keep My Buck or Two by almost 38%, which isn't really significant. It gets back to what I was saying before about it. Yeah. They're that's not really that much of a. They're 33 or 34% of people wanted high hands with that money, and 29% wanted a bad beat. So, I mean, really, you're looking at a few percentage points that people don't want it, and people who do want it, and people who want to have a bad beat. So, I don't know what to take from that, really, other than to just, say, hey, it's equal out there. You're never going to make anybody happy, but at least you're doing something with the money.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the lesson is, if you're really trying to please everyone, have both a bad beat jackpot and do high hands. And then maybe have a couple games in your room that are not jackpot eligible. Though that's a slippery slope because, people like me say, hey, let me keep my buck or two. But when I go in the promotion and there's 400 people in the room all chasing a $400,000 bad beat and my hand isn't eligible, all of a sudden I change my tune a little bit. So, I guess the illustration here is this is one of those things you can't win. So you just got to do what's best for your room. And we talked about this before too. I mean, some of the people that say let me keep my buck or two don't really understand the advantage to having these rakes, even though the money, that dollar comes out of the pot every day. It does other things for the room. But when you have a gun to somebody's head and say, all right, I do this, and this means this, then the answers change too. Sure. And that's where it really gets challenging, I think, for room managers.
And I think most rooms, from what our listings tell us in our Where to Play pages, most rooms do both the bad beat and high end anyway. So if you combine those two, you're looking at, 63% of the people want something to do with that, want that jackpot, or want something to do with that money for them and not keep the money. So that way, if you are doing both those things, which most are, then you are pleasing two-thirds of your players. So
very true. Yeah, and the other players probably don't complain too much.
Right.
It's one of those things where you know it exists. So you just gotta live with it, like taxes.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get taxed. I wish I didn't. Wish I didn't have to pay tax, but since I did, then whatever. So. So this next one is one of the first ones that I was truly surprised over, and I'll be interested to see if you think you were surprised too. What do you look for most in a tournament? And the top choice with 43% was blind structure, with guaranteed prize pool and payout structure tied at 23%.
That is surprising to me.
Only 10% mentioned the buy-in to rake ratio.
Wow.
Which, you know, when you talk to poker players, that's a big thing. Oh, how much are they raking? They're raking too much. I'm not going to play that. But only 10% said that's... and again, this is the most thing. I mean, obviously, a lot of people are looking for all these things. But, you know, I think it shows that people just want longer tournaments now.
And that's what's really shocking about it is, basically, when I think of someone saying that they want their blind structure to be a quality, longer blind structure, they're basically telling you they want value for their money. They want to be able to play as long as possible. Yet the buy-in to rake ratio is the same kind of thing. You want value for your money, but that wasn't as popular. It was less popular than guaranteed prize pool and payout structure, which payout structure is back to the money thing too. But I was surprised that the buy-in to rake ratio wasn't higher.
Yeah, very surprised.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess what you would, if you want to draw lines here, I would say that, you know, if you give people a longer tournament, which obviously costs the poker room time and effort, and the poker room says, all right, I'll do that, but I'm going to have to take a bigger bigger entry fee in order to compensate for it, players, 43% of players probably should not be upset about that.
Yeah.
So maybe that's something to look into. I mean, tournaments were a big theme through this, not just in the questions about them, but we'll talk about that later on. But I definitely got an overall sense that people are much more tournament happy this year than our previous surveys.
Yeah, I got that too.
You know, and we keep talking on the show about, you know, how tournaments don't make money for casinos, but maybe there's an opening here now for casinos to say, hey, all right. You know, if people want them, we're going to give them to you. We're going to give them to you the way you want them, and we're going to make it pay for them.
Yeah.
Well, and see where the market can
As the anti-up statistician compiler for the magazine each month, every once in a while the results will come in with just the total number of entrants and the buy-in, but it doesn't come in with the prize pool. So I always have to figure out what they charge, go back to the ad, try to find that on the website, whatever it is,
right,
then figure it out myself. And I have been noticing a lot lately that the usual fee is not always being taken anymore. And it's like these, like sometimes I looked it up and, you know, if it was, so let's say it was a $550 event, you would think it'd be $500 to the prize pool and $50 to them. But then when you look carefully at it, it was $52 to them, and you know, and so I thought, wow, so they are starting to adjust it a little bit. I mean, and not tremendous amounts, but they're not always the $50 to the house and $500 to the player now. I didn't want to assume anything, so that's why I want to double check every time. And I tell you, it's getting harder and harder to get those prize pools calculated for the results, because they are changing what they're taking, and it's not always more either. It's less.
Sometimes you got dealer add-ons too. You got money withheld from the prize pool for the staff, and sometimes all that stuff. So I mean, that all kind of adds up to, I guess, what we're talking about. You know, maybe rooms are figuring out that this is what people want. You know, I didn't put on there, and I'm sure I probably would have won, but it kind of goes to blind structure, was chips. You know, when I travel around the country, and poker room managers say, gosh, God, what are we going to do? Players keep coming in and they say, I want more chips.
Yeah.
And they're like, all right, we'll give you more chips. We'll adjust the structure so it's the exact same tournament. But it makes you happy to start with 20,000 chips at 10-minute levels rather than 10,000 chips and 20-minute levels. Hey, we'll make you happy.
You're probably right, though. It probably is within that blind structure answer. It's probably that feeling of the chips, so...
Exactly, yeah. And I think the difference, too, is, you know, a blind structure, not only is it, you talk about value of the tournament, which is a good point, but I think some people see the value of a tournament not so much in how much they pay in or how much they get out, but whether they have, what the value or a possibility of them winning that tournament. and you know, you take the best players in the world and you put them in some of these daily $40 tournaments that almost all the rooms run.
Yeah.
With really ridiculous blind structures, and all of a sudden they're not the best players in the world anymore. You know, because you take a lot of this the skill out.
Yeah. Right.
And then you go to the World Series where you got 2-hour levels, and then you can really shine. So I mean, I think there is a case. I could see where players would say, hey, you know, as long as you give me a chance to win this tournament, I don't care if I have to pay a little bit more or the payout structure isn't great. I just know I don't have a chance in a 30+10 with 6 minute levels,
yeah, right,
and 1,000 chips.
Oh, one thing that was funny was we had the availability of rebuys, add-ons, or re-entry as a category, and less than 1% of the respondents voted for that. So clearly, rebuys and add-ons and re-entry events aren't that important. They don't mind it when it's part of the tournament, but it's not the most important thing to them.
Right, exactly. All right, and then on the next two, and I thought this was an interesting, they're two separate questions, but they look very similar. How far have you traveled to play in a poker tournament? 41% said more than 500 miles. And then how far have you traveled to take advantage of a poker room promotion? 48% said fewer than 50 miles.
Yeah.
So the takeout is, you know, people will go all the way across the country for a tournament. Of course, that's skewed a little bit because a lot of these people are probably going to the World Series, maybe. But they're not going to travel all the way across the country for promotion, but they'll go close to their home.
Yeah, well, that makes sense, right? Because I'm not going to go to California for an Aces Crack promotion, but I might go there for a World Series circuit event.
Well, so. But it could be a better promotion, but, you know, and maybe that's, you know, there's a lot of stuff you can read into these surveys. You know, maybe people are like, yeah, you know, promotions generally are Aces Cracked. I don't really care.
Well, the other thing, too, is let's say, you know, a bad beat. People have been known to drive across Florida to go to Coconut Creek when it's $500,000 and then leave the minute it happens. But very rarely are you going to travel more than 500 miles. I mean, that's pretty far to go for any kind of promotion, no matter what it is.
All right, our next one was about online poker, which, of course, is in the news now. And has been all the last year and a half or so. And to me, the surprising thing here isn't what won here, but some of the other numbers. And we'll see what you have to say. But it says, when online poker is regulated, what type of regulation do you prefer? And an interstate where, you know, multiple states are working together, obviously, 77%. But 5% actually preferred an intrastate.
Yeah, I don't understand why. I mean, here's the thing, and the other number there is no regulation was 18%. And I guess their motivation for the no regulation is, you know, that they want to be able to just play poker without the government knowing and not have to worry about reporting their wins or something like that. I'm sure that could be the root of their voting. But the intrastate, I don't know what they gain by just playing against people in their own state. Maybe it's because they feel like it's you know, more beneficial to their state, that if only people in their state are playing, then they'll get all their own money. But there's no way it could be more money than doing it worldwide or state to state. So I'm surprised that, I mean, it was still overwhelming that interstate won, but I'm surprised that it wasn't more.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, some of the conversations that I've had with folks, particularly our listeners, I mean, this kind of gets into kind of a political viewpoint thing sometimes with folks, where, you know, you have principles that may not really jive with what's probably best for reality, and we're all like that on some issues. And it's likely to me that some of these 5% just said, hey, this is I'm a big states right kind of guy, maybe.
Yeah.
And I just don't want the federal government messing in things. I prefer my state government to mess in things, even though they know that it probably is going to result in a crappy poker room. You know?
Yeah.
So I'm guessing maybe that's where some of it is. But also 18%, I put on the nose, Wild Wild West, but the actual answer was no, none of this, no regulation.
Right.
And I'm a little surprised by that, too. I mean, we just were a week out from the whole Full Tilt thing finally being resolved, or at least an agreement done, where players lost a bunch of money and now they're getting it back through, you know, a lot of luck. You know, we've had scandals here, scandals there, and people still want to just get online and They're like, you know what? I'll take the chance that I'm getting screwed. I just don't want anybody taking a cut at me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. I mean, maybe it's sometimes it's because we don't offer them a chance to explain their answer. That,
exactly.
You know what
right.
I mean? That could be it. So there could be a lot of reasons why people wrote it that way. But generally, it's probably just because they just don't want to have to report that they won money or have Big Brother watching them and knowing that they're playing or whatever. So that's probably their answer. But yeah, I think that if you said, hey, there have been cheating scandals because the U.S. wasn't involved in regulation and there have been, you know, third-party things that you've been lying to when you didn't realize you were being lied to or something, maybe if all those things were explained to them, you know, they might say, okay, well, I would want regulation, but I just don't want Big Brother knowing. I mean, or I don't know how they would answer that question. But.
Well, and I don't want anybody to think that I'm criticizing people with those 18%. Right. I mean, you go back to the whole Texas Road Gambler days. I mean, you know, Doyle Brunson, I mean, they knew that there was a good chance when they go to these games that they're going to get robbed and lose their money, and that's just, that was a cost of doing business.
Right.
For them. And they ended up making more than they were robbed. You know?
Yep.
So, I mean, you know, I don't think I was ever cheated online as far as I know. And so, I mean, it's very likely that some people say, you know, hey, it's not as big of an issue as it sounds, and I'm going to take my shots. And, you know, nothing wrong with that. All right, so since Black Friday, where do you play online? And this was an interesting one because we talked to a lot of people. You know, you got people like me that, you know, hey, I just miss PokerStars. I just can't bring myself to play for anything when there's not really money on the line. I was curious to see what people said, and it ended up being 32% said free play sites, which, of course, probably includes PokerStars home game.
Yep, yeah, our Papes has taken over.
Yep, or Zynga or any of those type of things. 25% still play on the real money sites that are open to U.S. players, and 13% are playing on these monthly subscription sites.
Mm-hmm.
And about 30% of our folks said they're not playing anywhere online. Now, we don't know of that, obviously, how many weren't playing online before anyhow, so
right.
It's tough to make too much hay out of that, but I've always kind of struggled to understand these monthly subscription site business models. I know that they appeal to, that they're wildly popular to people that really like them, but it's a tough business, I think. And,
sure.
And you're seeing this here, you know, only 13% play on them, so I mean, you got to really give somebody an incentive to fork over 30 bucks a month. Even though on the surface it sounds great. Hey, all you can play and win these great prizes. And I don't know whether some of this is just people just being cheap, you know, though it's just play on free sites.
Well, I do think that the Black Friday itself has to be the overriding factor. Why would I put money on a site that isn't a monthly subscription site? Because those obviously are legal in everyone's mind. Whereas the real money sites, you never know if someone's going to come down on them when you got your cash sitting there on Bovada or Lock or whatever those sites are.
Right.
And
right.
So why would I, what, just to play for real money, I'm going to take a chance of losing all of my money without even, there's no skill in that, you know, losing all your money to someone who shut your site down again. So I think that that's probably the leading factor why there are people not playing on the real money sites that are still open. But I also want to say that I think that the none of the above number is probably more accurate than we think, because there was the ability to skip the question, and I felt like if you were skipping this question, then that was because it didn't apply to you, whereas if you answered it, you were playing online before Black Friday. And so I feel like that none of the above 30% number is probably pretty accurate.
Yeah. It looks like about eighth of the folks skipped that question.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not good with the math, so I can't figure out the percentage rule.
Just feel it, Scott. Do you feel like it was an eighth?
Feel it. I feel like you're right, Chris. I do.
You know, I mean, I have to admit that I'm none of the above. I'm like you. I wanted to play for real money, but I didn't want to put money on a site knowing that any minute now the big, you know, FBI DOJ logo could be on my screen saying, oh, sorry, that 300 you put online is gone now, and then going through what everybody else is going through now, so or had gone through up till now. So I am glad that, you know, people are finding the subscription sites and still playing, and people are still playing on the free play sites just to keep their online, you know.
Yeah, I mean, 70% of our respondents are still playing online somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably the bigger number.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Okay, so what's the biggest factor in deciding in which poker room to play? This gets back to the thing that I was talking about before, where it's so close, then what do you take from it? The winner was tournaments. Mm-hmm. And I think we've seen that theme throughout this survey, that tournaments, like you said, really did sort of come to the forefront this year. But 35% said tournaments, but 34% said location. So where it is just as important as to what they're offering when it comes to the player.
Yeah, this is one actually separated by 3 votes, so really it's a statistical tie.
Yeah.
You would call it. Yeah. But location was, I believe, I need to go back and look, but was a pretty strong winner on our previous surveys. And now all of a sudden tournaments are really catching up and that's what I'm saying. It's part of this theme that I'm seeing here is that people now, before it was, hey, I'm just going to go to my closest room unless there's I really don't like it or someplace else really gives me a reason to come. And that's a tough thing for poker room managers to deal with. You know, they can't pick up their room and move it.
Exactly.
You're stuck with your location. But this year it indicates there is something you can do about it. You know, if you don't have a terrific location, but you put together some really good tournaments, by these numbers, it sounds like more than a third people are going to be willing to drive by the one that's closest to their house and come play in the room.
Yeah, that's, I guess that's encouraging if they feel confident in their staff and their structures and their payouts and stuff, that they feel like they can take away from other people's business or whatever. So it's a trend, I think. One of the things that I found on here, I don't know what to read into it because we're only limited to what we can say in these questions, is the cash game variety came in third at 16%. And again, that could mean their local poker room only has 1-2 on hold'em in it, and they don't have 2-4 limit, or they don't have 5-10 no limit. It doesn't mean necessarily that I want Omaha and stud 8 in my room. So
exactly,
you know, that it's definitely that they want some sort of variety in the games, but it's not necessarily what the variety is that, you know, that won't be able to really have them focus on what they want to do with their poker room. But knowing that they don't want 10 games of 1-2 listed up there is a start.
Yeah, and I will say I meant to go back today, and I forgot this morning to. You know, we'll have this next question we'll talk about is we have some open response questions.
Yeah.
And some good answers. But I wanted to go back and kind of categorize the open answers into like categories so you can kind of get an idea of, you know, what the overall theme was. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And cash game variety came up a lot in that. And a lot of it was exactly what you're talking about. Different games, you know, stud, Omaha, Raz, something like that. Not so much a 1-3 versus a 2-5 or something like that. What I think is, and this has always been the case, I think, is you've got, it's a small percentage, only, 15% that said that's the biggest factor for them. But it's a very passionate 15%.
Yeah.
And you're probably able to carve out a little niche in your room if you cater to that group. You're not going to make a lot of money, but you know, you got some market share issues there.
And last place was promotions and jackpots, which is interesting. And I think that's probably the norm because I mean, like you said, I would travel for something that's remarkable, but I wouldn't make it the most important reason why I'm going there. So,
yeah.
I mean, I guess that's pretty understandable. That's why it came in at 6%.
Well, yeah, and if we had some kind of NASA scientist to actually really drill down on these results for us, I mean, the one question I would ask is, I mean, later on in the show, we're going to talk about popular poker destinations, and South Florida did really well in that, and that is the most promotion-happy market in the country, but only 5% say is the biggest factor, so we've got to think that that we got quite a few people from South Florida that answered this, and those two things are at odds, I think.
Yeah, well, I guess when I took the survey and I looked at the destination thing, I thought of, like, if I'm going to get on a plane and go somewhere, that's how I took it. So if I'm traveling the country to South Florida, it's not going to be for the promotions. It's because I'm traveling to go see South Florida or the Miami Beach and all the beautiful stuff down there and the attractions and stuff. So, I mean, I don't know. I think of the answer for this question as your local stuff, and then destinations as just, you know, where you're traveling to, why you'd want to go there as a destination. Because that's I think they're not the same thing. I think you know, this is pretty standard. I wouldn't travel to a poker room, or I wouldn't even go to my locally. I wouldn't go to a poker room just because of a promotion if it's not some massive thing. But I definitely would go because it's close by, or because they have a really good tournament that I like to play in.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it's a good question though.
All right, this next one's always a fun one for us. It's an open answer question. If you could take over your favorite poker room for one day, what would you change? And, of course, we got several hundred different answers. but a couple themes that developed, and then just a couple interesting and or funny answers that I want to shame. But in terms of the themes, two of them I thought were big. One, game variety, which we just mentioned.
Yeah.
Lots of people mentioned mixed games, Omaha, stud. You know, hey, there's more than No Limit Hold'em out there. And then quite a few people mentioned that they're really missing single table tournaments or sit and goes and or step satellites. And I'm one of these folks. I mean, I used to love going to my local poker room and playing these little $100 six-handed sit and goes all day.
Yeah.
And then when the limits changed here, you know, everybody started gravitating towards the cash games because they didn't have to grind those sit and goes, and you can't get them going anywhere. And a lot of places I travel, they're like, gosh, I just really would love to play some sit and goes, but we just can't get them going. There was one room I recently went to that they're scheduling them on Sunday now, and they're taking off. So it's kind of a lot of thing with both these things. You know, if you scheduled maybe these mixed games, you let everybody know, hey, Wednesday is Omaha night, or Thursday stud night, or Tuesday is sit and go day, then folks at least know that on that day there might be a chance that stuff goes, rather than just coming in at any random time. Because both of these things require enough people to get them going.
And here's the other thing, and I think we've brought this up a few times on the show. Our good friend Sam Minatello, in his poker room, he has a microphone. He sits at the at the table, or whoever his right hand man is that day, he'll sit at the table. And they'll start saying, hey, we got a 125 sit and go, six-handed going. We got two people. Anybody interested in third person? We need another third, you know. And they'll constantly talk it up and putting it in their minds. Whereas if you just put it up on the Bravo system and it just says list of interest, $60 sit and go, and then one set of initials, if you're playing in a cash game and you're already in the game and you're concentrating on the game, you're not looking up at the board saying, hey, is there two or three of that sit and go I want to... No, but if you constantly hear somebody saying, hey, trying to get a sit and go going, and now you've won a big pot for $300 and it's only $125 sit and go, now you've got the money, now you've been reminded of it. So really, it's all in the effort. You can't just say, oh, sure, we offer sit and goes, but nobody's interested in them. I mean, you have to work for it. And then once you get that business going and people know it's coming and people know that you're going to be there every day pushing them, then they're going to be going there looking for that and wanting to enter it. And then that's what gets the ball rolling, I feel.
Yeah, and one of the things I'm more surprised about, that we don't see too many of them and more rooms doing that kind of tack. You know, let's say you walk into a poker room and there are seven people on the list for 1-2 no limit. All right, you don't have enough to start a new table. But if you were to announce, hey, who's interested in a $100 six-handed sit-and-go now, you might be able to get that going. That list comes down a little bit, and maybe the people on the list don't want to play the sit-and-go, but maybe somebody comes out of a cash game, which normally is a kiss of death, but you've got a list, and people can go back into that cash game, and now you've just made six people happy.
Yeah, or maybe even...
And you make yourself a little bit more money for the room.
Right, or maybe even offer a special or something, you know, a reduced rake on that. You know, hey, for the seven people on the waiting list, it looks like it's going to be a little bit longer, but if you want to play in a sit-and-go, we'll take 10% off the juice, or whatever. Maybe that'll get them all to do... I don't know. I mean, it sounds kind of weird to say that, but maybe there is some sort of incentive for them to do that too. There's just got to be a way to get sit and goes going again, and I think really it's being proactive and not just sitting back saying hoping six people randomly walk up to you at the exact same time and want to play in a sit and go, because this is never going to happen.
Yeah,
you know, when it was the only thing because it was $100 buy-in max back here in Florida, then they all went down there knowing, okay, this is what we got to do today to make some money, so we just keep pushing them and keep playing and re-entering, and then that's how you got the business going. But now you got to start over again. If you want them, you have to work for them.
All right, so a couple interesting comments here. First one, I thought this was fascinating. Cell phone charging station.
That's brilliant.
You know, you go to these airports, you know, I travel a lot. There was actually one the other day where there were, like, people getting into a fist fight over the outlets on the cell phone charging station. It wasn't even one of these airports that says, ah, screw you. We're not even going to give you outlets. They actually set up one of those little, you know, station things, and there just weren't enough plugs. There are people, like, plugging plugs into plugs. you know, I don't know what the liability or the cost or anything like that, but I think that's right. You just have a little cell phone station somewhere. People come in and plug their stuff in. Now, I know part of the problem is you hear it over at the loudspeaker. Hey, if you've got your iPhone plugged into the outlet on the back wall, come claim it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a possibility that it could cause some frustration rather than great. But, you know, it's a great idea, isn't it?
I think it is, and especially if they have one of those stations that charge your phone, like, in a matter of seconds rather than it just sitting there, which most of them are like that. You know, they'll pump it up twice as fast than a regular outlet. And, you know, I mean, there have got to be scores of people who leave the poker room because their phone is dead. Yeah. And they don't want to not be in communication with their business or their family or their girlfriend or whatever it is. And I know I hate it when I'm at the table and I look down at my phone, the battery's turning red, and I'm like, oh my God, I gotta go or whatever. And I think it's a brilliant idea. I think it's a great idea, and people should really look into getting them in their rooms.
I was
laughing at this next one. Install headphones at the table so you can listen to the TVs. That would just be an absolute nightmare, I think.
Can you imagine? Everybody with everybody at the table with headphones on, so no one's listening to anyone. And then you got the germaphobes that are, like, you know, wiping it down, and oh my God, that guy with the bird's nest in his hair just have this on, and now I'm putting it on. I think we both saw solution to this. There are several rooms out west, Arizona, California, where they actually have kind of a frequency there.
Yeah.
Where you can tune it in to yourself. If you've got, you know, an FM transmitter on your phone or a radio, you can tune in within that room and hear it. I get the idea. I mean, there's nothing more frustrating to me when I'm in a poker room and I'm watching a game, or even worse, watching ESPN, and you have no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
And sometimes they'll put the closed captioning on, and that just frustrates you more because you're looking at someone totally misspelling a word or something. But,
well, the other thing, too, is that that solution is the solution, where each TV has its own frequency, because otherwise they'd be at the table saying, well, can we put the Miami game on? Because I want to watch Miami. No, I'm watching the Yankees. Well, I want to watch the Marlins. And then can you imagine the cost to the poker rooms? To now, some of them won't even pay for the Bravo wiring system because how expensive it is. Now they're going to pay to have every single seat have a jack pumped into it for a headphones that's plugged into a TV system. I mean, it's just no way that's going to happen. Just no way. But you can dream, I guess. You can dream. But I do like the frequency answer. That if you want to watch the TV that bad, they will tell you what the frequency is. Or I don't even know. It's not the frequency. It's like the radio station, right, that's covering that game or something,
89.3 or something. I mean, you can tune your
radio. Yeah, tune your whatever your FM radio on your phone is. Oh, my God, installing headphones. Oof, that would be an absolute nightmare.
All right, so these next couple ones are kind of, I guess, themes as well, too. Move the smokers at least 50 feet away from the poker room.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned earlier, there were, you know, just as many people that said, give us one day a week where we can smoke in the room. So you can't win with that. But the reason I put this one on there is because this is an example, I think, where either poker room managers or casino operators are trying to make everybody happy. All right, the poker room itself is non-smoking, but as long as you go right outside that rail, you can smoke. All right, so now you're making it convenient for the smokers to get up and get a couple puffs, but unless you've got some kind of fans or something going on, that smoke is going to drift right back in the poker room, and you're essentially defeating the whole purpose of it being a non-smoking room, other than, you know, you're not having deep, strong puffs growing right in your face.
Wait, you know, Go ahead. I got a funny story.
When I went on the last trip down to South Florida last week, I got on the little rental car bus, right, and it was packed. So I was like the second to last one on, third to last one last on, actually. And then I hear the driver saying, "All right, man, we got to go." So she gave him this look like, "Oh my gosh," and ashed her cigarette out on the ground. I could see her mouth was just like full, and she started walking into the bus, and I'm like, "Don't you do it? Don't you do it?" And then she went open her mouth.
Yeah.
And this massive, like 3 mile island stench of smoke right into my face, all over my clothes. And it was like, you could tell it was not even non-filtered cigarettes. It was like, we're not even going to pretend there's a filter on this cigarette. It took me days. The entire trip, I reeked of smoke, and I never had a cigarette in my life.
Oh, the one thing I was going to say is I had kind of a funny story about 50 feet. 50 feet is nothing, by the way. To prove my point, my in-laws, when I first moved to Florida, my in-laws had like a place in Fort Myers for a little while. They were there 6 months out of the year. They have since moved back to Connecticut. But when we came here, he gave me directions. And so the directions were perfect. Then he said, when you pull into the park, it was a trailer park, when you pull into the park, you'll turn right into the park. He said, and then 50 feet in front of you will be a stop sign. Then turn right. So, of course, I took the turn, and boom, there's a stop sign. And I'm like, why did he say 50 feet? That was like 6 feet. So I get to his place, and he's like, how are the directions? I said, good. I said, except the stop sign ain't 50 feet. It's like 10. He goes, no, it's 50 feet. I said, it's not 50 feet. He said, come on, let's go. He got the 25-foot tape measure. We walk out there, and it was like 85 feet. I'm telling you, 50 feet is nothing. So yeah. When you see 50 feet, you think, oh my God, 50 feet, yeah, at least 50 feet away with smoke. No, you want them 500 feet away, if possible, because 50 feet is, I don't care how many fans you have, 50 feet, you're going to be able to smell it on their clothes. 50 feet is nothing. So just
50 feet is a first down.
Exactly. It's nothing. And when you're bowling, it's 60 feet from the foul line to the head pin. That's not far away at all. So, you know, ask for a little further distance if you're going to ask for it. But anyway.
All right, next one. Actually empower the dealer. And I thought this was interesting. There are quite a few answers on train the staff. The staff sucks. The staff is great. And a lot of ones were, you know, control the game, don't play favorites, enforce the rules properly. So I'm wondering what this means, actually empower the dealer. Are we saying that we want to eliminate floors, no floor calls, we just want to have the dealers be the boss at the table and say, hey, this is what's going to be? I don't know exactly what this person meant.
Yeah, it's hard to guess. I mean, it could be something as simple as, for simple rulings, let the dealer know the rules of the house, teach the dealers the rules of the house more than what they already know, and let them just say, the rule of the house is this, this is why I'm doing this with your cards right now, or whatever. And then if they bitch, then they could go to the floor or whatever. But I really don't know what it means either. I can only guess that's what it might be means. I don't know. I mean, you don't want to give them too much power, because that defeats the purpose.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And they're like, hey, no super eel. 4-round penalty. All right, so we talked earlier about the tweeting and texting didn't seem to strike the nerve that I thought it would, but this particular respondent, it did. No electronic devices at any poker table. Play poker or leave the table to take care of your business or monkey business.
I can assume that the monkey business is like chatting on the phone with your buddies instead of your business associates.
I'm wondering. I'm like, hey, dude, it's on you. Oh, I'm sorry, man. I was following the gorilla cam at the Washington Zoo. I'm sorry.
Monkey business.
I'm in. I call.
Oh, my God. Well, the next one is you. Crabby old men players.
I know. I put this on here. Apparently, I will never be able to play in a poker room ever again now.
Get rid of all the crabby old guys at the table, and including the ones who have premature gray hair.
And I tell you, I am getting crappier by the day when I go in. I really am one of those get off my lawn kids guy already at the ripe old age of 40. I'm losing patience with people, and I lose patience with people that only care about themselves. You know, if I didn't want to get into a huge fight, I would have said something to that smoke and dragon lady that totally ruined my clothes. But I'm like, let's go. But I mean, it's indicative of kind of our society now that people only care about themselves.
Yeah.
And so you know, there are, don't get me wrong, there's plenty of crappy old men players at the table that, that only care about themselves and just want to bitch about everything. But then you got crappy old men like me at the table that just are ticked off at our society now.
Yeah, crappy with a purpose is okay, right? That's what you're... as long as you have a purpose, something that is motivating you to be crabby, that's okay. But just to be crabby, it's unacceptable. Stop cooking fried food 10 feet from the poker room.
10 feet? 10 feet's nothing.
10 feet's nothing.
I got a great story. I was going to this mobile home park. here's the thing. I'm not going to say the poker room, but there's a poker room that you and I travel to often that I know as soon as I walk in the door, I am going to be hit by this kind of fried pizza kind of smell.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if that's the right term, but I mean, it's not just pizza. It's not just fried. It's kind of this weird concoction that that you might put in a bottle and use it to as rat repellent or something. and it turns your stomach. So, I know what this guy's saying, you know. We don't need to turn everything into a California roll sushi kitchen here. But, maybe make the food service convenient, but not too convenient.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because this I'm surprised that we didn't have anybody say don't offer food at the table, which I know everyone loves that convenience. But, you know, you got people eating wings or even like chicken fingers and your hands are greasy and... You know, it just shot our French fries. I'm just surprised no one even said that, or at least we didn't get somebody as poignant as the.
Yeah,
fried
and to be honest, I would need to go back and check, but I didn't see a lot of most of the food responses in this answer were quicker service,
yeah.
Or better service,
yeah,
and not so much get rid of it. all right, then this is one I want to talk about a little bit. I would change the decor to something livelier. I hate that most poker rooms look stuffy and dull. And there was a second one that I put on here, but very similar to that. I mean, I think we're starting to get some people that say, you know what, it's not enough just to give me a table and chips and cards. You know, I want to feel comfortable when I'm in your room.
Amen. I have to say, amen. Because how many times have you and I, and again, a lot of people, when they commented on our show and stuff, they said, you know, hey, Scott and Chris, you guys used to rail on poker rooms and stuff, but now it's in your business, you don't do it anymore. And it's true, because we got to be careful what we say, but how many times have you and I said, oh, there's a brand new poker room opening X, we got to go see it and review it for the magazine. And then you get there, and it's just like, wow. Tan walls and black chairs, and that's all there is. And you're like, it's a brand new poker room. Why didn't they take the time to put up artwork or design it better? You know what I mean? Or something. It just seems millions and millions of dollars are put into this. Yeah, okay, you got the technology. You got the brand new felt to the most comfortable chairs, which is fine, which is what most players are looking for. They want to have a comfortable session. But then the walls are tan. The entire room is bland tan or gray, or, you know, and it's like, where is the history of this property, or where is the liveliness of feeling like you're comfortable, like you're in someone's living room playing poker, or even vibrant, so that it keeps you awake and something to look at when you're tossing in the 47th consecutive deuce 7 hand that you can't play because you only can play hold'em in this room. I totally agree with this. There are some rooms that are just gorgeous. You walk in, you're like, wow, I'm glad I came here.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm playing, because it's fun to be in this place. I feel like I'm living outside my means, so to speak, sometimes, just by being here. And then there are other rooms it's like, oh my God, you know, I'm in a warehouse. Why am I sitting around with these thugs in a warehouse when I could be, you know? I mean, I have to totally agree with that. I really think that some people just wanted to get tables put in to get the money and didn't really give any thought to, hey, what are these guys going to be doing while they're folding, you know, 8 out of every 10 hands? And
I definitely get excited when we're talking to poker room managers that you can tell get this, care about it. And they're like, hey, those chairs, how do you like those chairs? And I'm like, hey, they're great. They better be, because I spent $500 each on them.
Right.
I'm like, no, they're great. But you get the idea that they understand the model that in poker, whatever you can do to get people in the room and keep them in the room is going to pay off. So you got this bean counting on the front end saying, oh, we can't afford this. When really, if you think about it and you spend it wisely, you could spend a lot more money on the front end and make a lot, even more money on the back end. You know, if you invest in, you know, just making the room comfortable and homey.
Absolutely. If you knew that you had to go to work every day, and when you went to work every day, you were looking at, you know, beautiful artwork and relaxing, people were bringing you food and you know, or are you going to go to work where the walls have, you know, they're all gray and there's holes in the walls and people are telling you to eat at your desk, and you know, I mean, it's one of the, which one are you going to choose? And just to me, when I play, I want to be comfortable, and not just in the seat of my pants. Yeah. You know, I want to be like, oh, this is kind of cool stuff to look at, stuff to enjoy, stuff to take in, aesthetically pleasing stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of these things on here talk about that, about keeping people in the room, a cell phone charging station. My phone dies, I leave. Yeah. All right, now I got a cell phone charging station. I'm hungry. All right, we're going to bring you food, good food at a cheap price to your table. All right, I will stay then. You know, hey, the TV's on. I can actually listen to it and understand what's going on. All right, I'll stay and watch the game here rather than go home. You know, a lot of these things like that are, you know, you do a little bit, and not everybody wants everything, but you do enough of that, and next thing you know, you got a bunch of people staying in your room longer.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely.
All right, then the final one, I thought this was funny, too, because it shows the wide range of people that take our survey every year. Because the one I left off of here was topless dealers. You know, it just shows you that we do attract pigs to the survey, all right? Nothing wrong with topless women.
They're the same people that said the magazine should have naked women in it.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, the same people, so.
And then you had this person that says, free chocolate and wine for the ladies.
Now, wait a minute.
Not the men. Men don't get chocolate. Men don't get wine.
Well, that's what I'm asking, though. I have to ask that. Is it free chocolate and wine for the ladies, or is it free chocolate and wine for the ladies? That's what I'm wondering, because the way it's written, it couldn't be taken different ways. So
I could get behind the second one. I like that.
Me too. Free chocolate for everybody, and get the women drunk.
Yeah, put Scott L on the 1-2 table. All right, here's Scott. Here's a Nestle Crunch bar.
Here's your Hershey's.
Oh, you brought your wife with you? Okay, there's a Pinot down there. Go for it.
That is pretty funny.
But you can imagine the uproar if you walk in and it's one of those little Barnhill buffet, chocolate buffet, Golden Corral chocolate fountains, and the lineup of Kendall Jackson Chardonnay, and has a little sign on it, ladies only.
Ladies only.
And it's a lady, so I mean, it doesn't mean women. I mean,
that's true. That's
I know
true.
Some women who do not qualify as ladies. So
prove you're a lady.
Is there a test there? You gotta, you know, balance a book on your head or something, or cross your legs when you're sitting at the table. I don't know.
That's pretty funny. That's a good one to wrap it up with.
Stuff
though.
That you really like, I think, is you get these personalities a lot. And I'm not saying I didn't like it, but I know this is the part that I think you were more excited about.
Well, it's just, you know, like you said, within a year everything changed, and yes, Twitter's been around a long time, but it's really exploded, I think, in the last calendar year or so, with people getting on board and really tweeting everything they have to do with their poker current situation, either in a tournament or in life or whatever. And so I follow Twitter just like you do the Facebook thing. So for me, I picked some of the people that I thought I follow pretty much every personality out there just because they may be breaking news for us that we don't even know about, or they may have an angle that spark a topic for the show or something. So I do that. And there were a few people that were like, oh, you should have put this guy on the list, should have put that guy on the list. But you know what? I felt like what we put on was a good list. Jason Mercier, Doyle Brunson, Dan Negreanu, Matt Savage, and Kevin Mathers. Now, I'm not...
This is for the best poker tweeter, right?
Yeah, for the best poker tweeter. And I'm not surprised that Daniel Negreanu won, but I am surprised that it was a landslide. Now, I know he's got a lot of fans and he's got a lot of followers, but so do these other people. And I really thought people would look at it and be, well, I mean, what they tweet, you know, the best poker tweeter. Not the fact that they're the most popular person in the world, but that what they tweet was the best stuff. Now, Daniel Negreanu's tweets are always insightful or uneducated. It's funny. It's either he's really insightful or he has no idea what he's talking about and everybody jumps on him. So, yeah, that's probably an explanation to why he won this. But I really thought that Mathers or Savage would at least be much closer to that, to what Negreanu got. Negreanu got 54% of the vote. Mathers comes in second with 17. I really thought that Savage, because everyone asks him questions, and he answers everything, plus he's doing his funny stuff with his golf and his tournament experiences and stuff. And even Doyle Brunson. Doyle Brunson was pretty funny, but him and Savage are pretty much neck and neck. He barely edged out Savage. So I was shocked. I really thought Negreanu might win, but I really thought that Mathers or Savage would give him a run for his money. And I was really shocked. And Mercier came in, like, you know, all last with like 7%. Yeah. So, you know, we can only put so many. You don't want to put 20 people down, because then it just dilutes it so much that you can't really respect the answers. So those are the five that I picked. People were saying I should have had like Matt Glantz on there or Eric Seidel. And I'm sorry, but I've read Eric Seidel's tweets and I don't think he's even remotely as interesting as these guys. But whatever. But I was happy that, you know, that they all got a decent amount of votes. It was just overwhelming that Negreanu won. And I was shocked by that.
All right, so this is a good one for folks to talk about their next home game. Which would you most like to invite to your home game? And it was split rather evenly overall. Phil Locke, by far the best, 29%. But Jen Harmon, Antonio Esfandiari, and Phil Hummings Jr. were all around 20%. Not a lot of people were excited to have Mike Mattisau show up. At their own game.
It is interesting because, you know, you think about the personalities, and I would assume that's why you want Phil Locke, because he's hilarious and he's running around being crazy and stuff. But I look at the other ones other than Jen Harmon. I think of those guys as hilarious in their own right, too.
Yeah.
You know, I think Mattisau would be a blast in our home game, making fun of us, you know, left and right. And Esfandiari just, you know, of course he's got $18 million now to spread, so that'd be kind of fun to have him. But even Helmuth, because you know damn well that we suck, and Helmuth would think we suck, and he'd be like, idiot, you know, and stand up and yell at us and stuff. So I was kind of surprised that Locke won this one. And he won by a decent margin. I mean, he had 29% of the vote versus the closest was his buddy Antonio and Jen Harmon at 20. So, I don't know. I was kind of surprised by that. I think Phil Locke probably is the most entertaining of all these guys, and Jen Harmon. But I was surprised. I really thought Helmuth was going to win this one.
Yeah, and this is a tough question because it all depends on what you're looking for in the home game. Are you looking for entertainment factor? Then yeah, Phil Locke is up there. If you're looking for somebody you want to talk poker about, I would say Jen Harmon. One of the ones we put there would be somebody I would like to talk to at the table. Or are you looking at somebody just to say you beat? And I think a lot of people would say, I'd love to beat Helmuth or Mattisau. So
yeah.
There are lots of different ways of going, and we didn't have a and why on here, which
yeah.
probably would have been interesting.
Yeah. And this next one, too, you're going to make fun of me on it, but that's okay. I stand by it. But what professional player would you most like to see run for public office? Which I thought was a very interesting question. Because we do have a lot of people who are at the forefront of the voice of poker at some point in their career, whether it was, you know, Mike Sexton, you know, or even right up till now with that whole blog entry that we talked about and have written about now, and or Raymer with all of his political aspirations for the PPA and all that stuff, and or Annie Duke, you know, with, even though there's this whole debacle now at the Epic, you know, I mean, she's always been one that takes a stand and tries to do what's best. I mean, whether it worked out or not, she does. And Greenstein with his, he's just a genius. But I added Alan Kessler to this mix because, and I thought it would be a little controversial to have him on there, not realizing that Annie Duke would be the ultimate controversial person
really,
on here.
Yeah.
But because the Chainsaw is always the one on Twitter and Facebook or whatever who's always talking about the structures and looking out for the players' best needs, and that's what I think of in a political figure, is somebody should be looking out for us, which I think Sexton and Raymer and Greenstein or whatever, I think they do that. And I thought for sure Kessler, and he has a pretty decent following on Twitter, not knowing that he was, you know, causing a lot of trouble, but what politician doesn't? So yeah. Really, I really thought that by adding Alan Kessler to this, you know, and plus I thought he might retweet it and get people to vote for him and see this survey, and I really thought he, and of course, yeah, he got 4%. But Annie Duke got 7, so
and I wouldn't be surprised to see Greg Raymer on a ballot sometime.
Me neither.
I mean, he's made it very clear that his libertarian views, and he's very well spoken. And you know, I would have voted for Mike Sexton here, so I'm kind of in the majority. But I don't see Mike actually taking that step. But,
right. Right. Sexton did win 36%, but Raymer had 27, and Greenstein right behind it, 26%. So yeah, I really thought Raymer would win it, just because of the fact that he's already done essentially, you know, stuff, you know, with Congress, and of course so is Annie Duke when she spoke to them that time about skill and luck and all that. But I really thought Raymer would win this, and I guess just because Sexton is the ambassador of poker, essentially, that's probably...
Well, and he's done quite a bit, too. I mean, he's been
sure on the hill
just as much as these folks, too. So, but I think that they were all good choices, other than Alan Kessler.
Yeah.
Okay, fascinating, this next one. And I didn't look at the demographics on this. I believe it might help, but I think it was in the neighborhood of 75% of our survey respondents were men, 25% were women, somewhere in that neighborhood. But which poker player would you like to take as your date to your high school reunion? And we picked five women, five men to put them on there. So there's a buffet. So whatever your orientation is, you could choose. One voted for any of the men. And of course, you know, this doesn't mean it has to be, we said as your date, but it have to be, you know, date. Maybe it's just somebody, hey, I want to go to a ball game with you, you know. But the men just did not garner any support. Phil Ivey and Patrick Antonius were tied, only with 7% of the vote for the men.
Yeah, I think it's when you and I, when you wrote the questions and then you asked me to look them over, we probably should have talked about this a little more. It's probably just the way, you know, I mean, obviously, if 75% of the people taking this are men, you know, I mean, we probably should have had a different question, like, which one of these players would you like to hang out with one night? Yeah. Then it might be different, you know what I mean? Because then it would probably be overwhelming men. But when you say it's a date and 75% of the people are men taking this, which we knew probably was going to be the number, it's going to be skewed this way. So if you take it as the men only part of this, and those are the women answering those questions, then yeah, it seems about right between Gus, Patrick, and Ivy, you know. And of course, David Williams.
Yeah, you're right. It could have changed if we split it into two questions and said your date to your high school reunion or just to hang out with.
Yeah.
It kind of totally changes the question at that point. But
yeah,
I see
you. Yeah, because I mean, there's just no way that a guy is going to take Phil Ivy to his high school reunion with him. I mean, he's just not going to.
Well, some guys would. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
But the winner was Vanessa Russo, with 24%, 23.77%. And Kara Scott finished second with about 22% of the vote, which I guess in Liv Borey was... And it's funny because I think that a lot of these results from this, at least, come from who's most current right now in poker. You know, mm-hmm. when you think of Kara Scott, Liv Borey, and Vanessa Russo, their poker popularity is really in the last few years, whereas the other ones, Karina Jett, and even Tiffany Michelle, I mean, I guess Tiffany Michelle might be around as long as the other Vanessa Russo, but really, you know, Karina Jett was really popular in 05 when she was on TV and the women's event making final tables and has a column in a magazine and stuff like that. So I wonder if it's just because some of these people are newer to the poker scene and more popular and whatever.
Not that it was too terribly behind, but I was a little surprised that Liv Borey was third out of the women. And it is non-scientific, but that's the name I hear everybody talking about.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
And this isn't scientific either, but it's probably more scientific than just, oh yeah, I've seen the name come up on tweets a bunch. In fact, actually, Liv Borey came up in the, if you were poker manager for the day, what would you change? Actually said Liv Borey.
What's interesting about the top three women, they all have ties to Europe.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah.
Yes.
Even Vanessa Russo has a dual citizenship with France and the United States, so that's kind of interesting. David Williams and Chad Brown tied for the bottom at 1.57, and Williams just got engaged, so I'm sure that's, now he's off the market, that changes things too.
Well, no one's ever off the market. All right, I know you're gonna have fun with this next one. I was really excited to see how this played out. What is your favorite fictional poker player? To nobody's surprise, everybody in the world wants to be. I want to be like Mike. Mike McDermott, Matt Damon's character in Rounders, 39%, by far, the big choice. And then followed by Brett Maverick, Henry Gondorf from The Sting, and Teddy KGB were all around 12%. And I was very excited that Charlie Waters from a very underappreciated California Split, it's Elliot Gould's character in that great movie, got three votes. Three votes. So that means two other people than me voted for him.
Well, like the lady in that
you don't throw oranges on the escalator.
Commercial.
I did not vote for that line.
What was that commercial? I guess it's with the chips and the dip, and she's this guy's girlfriend, and then it's like poker night out. And then as the night goes on and she eats these chips, she becomes more and more of a player until she's got all this bling on her and stuff, and she's taking all the pots and all the chips, and she's like, buzzing! Well, that's me with this category right here, because you knew Mike McDermott was going to win. How could you not think he was... I mean, I thought, for sure, I thought Eric Stoner might come in second, the Cincinnati kid.
Yeah.
And he didn't. He's way down.
Way down, yeah.
But yeah, of course you want to be like Mike, because this sounds nice. I mean, it rhymes. Who wants to say, I want to be like Lancey, and that doesn't make any sense. It doesn't rhyme. You know, of course you want to be like Mike. So 38%, 39% really of the vote for Matt Damon's character in Rounders.
Yeah, so you're looking at probably, what, 59% of the vote was Rounders characters?
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of makes sense, and then... But the one-eyed Jack Farrow, Woody Harrelson's character in The Grand, got 5%, which doesn't sound like a lot, but I don't know a lot of people that have seen that movie.
Yeah.
You know, the rest of these movies, I think, are pretty well known. California Split might be an acquired taste. But but The Grand, I mean, it's a great movie. People should watch it if you haven't seen it. But I was kind of surprised that he got that many, because that indicates a lot of people have seen it and decided that... He was a better character. I don't think he's a great character, though.
Just a little extra note here. Cartoonish. If you have Netflix, it's on there. The Grand is on there if you have Netflix. So, and I think it might be on that Crackle service, too, which is free. It might be on the Crackle. I'm not sure. But I watched it on Netflix when I had one of those month trial things. So, you know, instead of renting it or whatever, I mean, Netflix, you could probably just see it on there for nothing. So.
And another important note, too, Rounders is always on at Chris's house. So
it's like out on my loop.
Next time you're in Pinellas Park, you know, you could just stop in.
Okay, what is the best poker blog? This was interesting. By 23/100ths of a percentage point, Full Contact Poker beat Phil Galfond's blog, which is Dan O'Grana's blog, obviously. 36.53% to 36.30. So, very interesting. Hard-boiled poker and Poker Grump were essentially neck and neck with 12 and 13%. And then Shaniacs was way at the bottom at just 4%. So, again, the popularity thing, I think, of Negreanu and probably Galfond went out. And there were other blogs that we could have put on here, but those were the ones that we decided we wanted to come up with. And... But not too bad. A lot of people skipped it, too. A lot of people skipped it because they probably don't read blogs.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that was the other question I was going to bring up here. It's funny because a blog is relatively a new invention. I mean, you didn't have blogs before you had the internet, right?
Right.
But I think it's one of those things that a big burst and a fizzle.
Yeah.
You know, because now, I mean, Twitter's really taken over, you know, Facebook, but definitely the Twitter. You know, people are communicating in those smaller bursts now, and it's sad because there's some really good stuff on these blogs and a lot of other blogs that we didn't list, you know, real insightful pieces, but I think these days people just are more excited for those little 140 character, you know, jokes or zings or questions rather than a longer discussion of a topic. So I think you're right. I think people aren't reading blogs as much as they were before.
And that's probably why so many skipped. I mean, it's interesting that you know, I'm glad people skipped, because I wouldn't want just some bloated, oh, I know who Phil Galfond is, let me vote for him, or I know who, you know, I mean, I would rather have them skip than just put in a number that they don't really read the blog. So I'm thankful for that. Just I am surprised that it was so close. But again, Negreanu wins two Anthes this year.
Yeah. And another very, very close one, what is the best poker audio network? And it ended up being Rounders Radio with 33%. Close behind, though, On Tilt Radio with 27%. Fifth Street, which was formerly Short Stacked, with 22%, and Hold'em Radio with 20%. So all about in the same neighborhood, different block maybe.
Yeah.
But this is an emerging trend too. It used to be, I mean, when we started our show 7 years ago, it's an independent podcast, still is. Mm-hmm. But now these days, it's things are kind of gravitating to these audio networks. Kind of tune in at any time of the day and hear poker programming and a good variety of them. And all these folks, you know, a little shout out, they replay our show for us, and most of these have us on as guests from time to time as well too. So,
and aren't we on most of these networks too? I mean,
we're on all of them.
We're on all of them. Yeah. Okay. So yeah. There you go. Oh man. Okay. What organization has done the most to promote women in poker? And I wouldn't say it's a landslide, but the Ladies International Poker Series, aka LIPS. Took down 51% of the vote. So if you're at a poker table and you have 51% of the chips, that's saying something. So
pretty good.
Yeah, they edged out High Heels, which had 29%. Woman Poker Player Magazine, which is now just online, I guess, at 12% or 11%, and then the Pink Ladies Poker Tour at just 9%. So the Ladies International Poker Series, see, international, that's the key, I guess. Being an international tour.
International.
Bring in that vote from across the pond.
You know, the good thing about these, all these folks have done a wonderful job for promoting women. So, you know, no losers here. All right, so I thought this would be a fun question, too. We're moving on to poker destinations now. Next question, what is the most hostile state toward poker? And the options I put out there for folks were Utah, which we all know passed a law opting out of any future federal online poker legislation, even though it doesn't even exist right now. Maryland, which insists law enforcement on those Black Monday investigations. Kentucky, which seized online poker site domains, or at least tried to. And then Alabama, which pretty much made the death penalty if you even flipped a coin in public. Shut down all forms of gaming in that state. And Utah wins it, 39%, but Alabama had a strong showing with 33%.
Yeah. And probably the other thing, too, is Utah was recently in the news, which probably aided that a little bit.
Yeah.
With the governor saying, there will never be, you know, so that, I'm sure that aided it. But, you know, they're all Maryland now. Maryland's going to start having casinos soon, right? So that,
yeah, it's kind of a weird one because they were so insistent on the Black Monday stuff, but they've actually opened casinos recently, and now they're looking they're going back in special session here to talk about adding table games and opening more. So I mean, it's kind of stuff to say it's hostile towards poker when they're at least talking about it now.
Yeah. Okay, so what is the best poker destination? And we had the list every state essentially that has poker in it somewhere.
And broke the big states into regions.
Yeah, and then broke the big states into their regions because...
So very fractured, right? Very fractured. We knew there was going to be fractured.
Yeah. One of the things that shocked me, and I'm not shocked by the winner, even though it's a huge number. I'm not shocked by it. But one of the things that shocked me was Southern California only getting 6%.
Yeah.
I was really shocked by that. When you consider L.A., the biggest poker rooms in the world are there, so they obviously are getting the most players in their rooms. And we are distributed there. Our show is carried there. We have people, you know what I mean? So for people to only garner 6% of the vote when it's really the poker mecca, I mean, really, California was on board with poker long before anybody else was, you know, or at least making headway with it. And I'm shocked by that. And Southern California, that's a destination to me.
Yeah, and it's not just L.A. You got the rooms near San Diego, yeah, and the inland rooms as well, too. You know, if I get some time sometime, I guess I want to figure out, obviously there's more poker rooms in Las Vegas, which won this by a large margin, 61%. But may not necessarily be that many more tables than in the Southern California market.
Yeah.
Those are massive rooms in Southern California. So, I mean, there's certainly quite a bit of opportunity to play there. But, you know, I guess, again, we talked about this at the top of the show. You mentioned destination. That means different things for different people.
Yeah.
You know, you go to Vegas, you get to the Strip, and you can walk up and down all those poker rooms. That's a destination. Where you go to Southern California, The rooms aren't terribly far apart, but you do got to get in your car and transverse a couple freeways to get there. So in terms of a destination for poker, I can see some people that might not see it that way, even though there's a lot of options and good rooms there.
And it's not surprising then that South Florida got pretty much the exact same percentage as California South Florida, you know, South, by with what, 6.85%. So essentially 7%, and that to me is a little shocking, because you would think South Florida, that's where everybody's talking about, was coming to Florida for poker, and then South Florida of course has all the stuff down there. Even Central Florida, you know, with Disney and all those things, you would think that, you know, the Tampa Bay area would get hit pretty good, and Daytona and all that. But really, just 7% for South Florida and 4% for Central Florida. And again, we're not shocked by South Nevada, which obviously is Las Vegas, having 61%. I mean, that's not really shocking. Just what's shocking is the percentages that the other ones garnered. It wasn't a lot. Even North Nevada got just about as much. With almost 6%, as South Florida and South California, so it's really shocking to me. But it speaks volumes. Obviously, you go to Nevada, that is clearly a destination. You've got Sin City and you've got all these rooms in the proximity, so it makes total sense. And we're not shocked by that.
And I also don't think it's shocking, the next question, which poker destination is emerging as the hottest now? So, I mean, you got the where do people want to go, and then where do you think people are going to want to go? South Florida, 28% by large margin. Second, though, was Central Florida, our home area.
Yep.
People just want to come here, and we're emerging as hot, Chris.
Clearly to come see us. That's the whole pull of the attraction or whatever, but you know, obviously it's the Busch Gardens in Tampa, Adventure Island in Tampa, the beaches of Clearwater Beach, the even considering Orlando is Central Florida, so you got all the parks there, and so that makes sense. You know, there's poker here, and there are these fantastic destinations and incredible weather, so it makes sense that Florida, if you put Florida all together, you know what I mean, it's like 40%, so...
Yeah, it just shows that people are... everybody's chatting about Florida now to the limits. I mean, it's been, a full year now.
Yeah.
Or longer now, where we could play real poker here. But I was expecting a stronger showing from the Pennsylvania rooms, which, you know, are doing quite well, and is a market that people are talking about. But on this question... if you combine the entire state, which would both be the Pittsburgh market and the Philadelphia market, it was only 7%.
Yeah. And clearly the East would be the more popular, because they're near Atlantic City, they're near the water, they're, you know, it's a different area than Pittsburgh. I thought so too. I thought for sure that there'd be more votes there. But, you know, again, it's still relatively new, and I know that the question is, you know, what's emerging as the hottest. So I don't know if people would think of that as hot, but definitely somewhere you'd want to investigate, because there's so many rooms now there, especially on the eastern side.
And I think next year we'll take a different tact on this. This year I kind of wanted to put everything out there, and knowing it was going to be fractured, but next year now we can kind of maybe categorize these better by region and make it a little bit more noteworthy.
Yeah.
And then if you could play in just one poker destination, which one would it be? South Nevada, Las Vegas area, getting big in, more than half of the votes. That's where people would want to play. If they could only play one place, it would be South Florida, distant second at 7%.
And that's not surprising. You know, it's pretty much the same question, just in a different way of saying it. So, I have to admit, I mean, when you go to Nevada and you go to Las Vegas, it's great, because even if you can't get to the room you want to by walking, there's a shuttle. You know, I mean, there's always someone to bring you there, or there's always a room 100 yards away, because you'd be surprised how short 100 yards is. It's almost 50 feet.
All right, well, that's it for this year's survey. We had a number of Annie Up questions, and we really appreciate everybody taking the time to answer those, and we promise you that we're taking all the suggestions that you gave us to heart, as we always do, and we'll work on making the magazine, the podcast, everything else we do even better. But I always look forward to this every year, hearing back from fans in a quantifiable manner.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the answers, and I love the feedback and the help, because it's like our own sort of research, you know what I mean? And And how are we going to know if we're doing anything wrong or doing everything right if unless we ask? So we appreciate everybody taking the survey, taking the time to go through it all, and I'm sure we'll be doing another one next year. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.